Brian Burke joins us as always on our Thursday, Brian. Good to have you. It didn't really hit me till we were looking this morning. I remember when the season was coming, we were debating, or there was the talk, the teams that didn't make the bubble for the playoffs, those teams that were on the outside, were they going to get an extended training camp, a little extra time, because it had been so long since they played? Now, Dallas wasn't one of them. Obviously, they played quite a bit within the bubble, but we sit here and talk about four games and three games, and are we overreacting? Man, the Dallas Stars haven't played a game yet. What possible... There's no way this is a positive for the Dallas Stars. They're going to come in and play their first game against whoever it is that is going to be hitting... They're going to need to hit the ground running here. How unfair, how tough is this going to be for the Stars?
Well, I think it puts them at a disadvantage, and it really compromises their schedule later in the year. When you the league built in days off to accommodate COVID-19-related cancellations, but the compression it's going to put into an already compressed schedule is going to be difficult. So I think it penalizes them twice. They're behind the ball to start,
yeah,
and they're going to have a compressed schedule that's difficult later. And I can envision, and the league hasn't talked about this, so this is just my theory. I can envision teams playing fewer than 56 games.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking this morning, with everything being what it is, almost nothing can be tossed out as being nonsense. In baseball, they play doubleheaders. Is there any way, when it's pressed at the end of the year, to play pair of 45-minute games, one in the afternoon and one at night, and play doubleheaders in hockey?
I doubt it, but I think if that it got to that point, I believe they would drop games. They would just say, well, this team's going to play 52 games, and we'll go on winning percentage.
Do you think it would be a case where you talk about them potentially not all the teams getting all their games in? If it's a team that's out of the playoff mix and there's two games left, okay, we'll just gun those games?
I wouldn't rule out anything. I think if you get to the end, let's say there's another cancellation for Dallas in February and they lose another 5 days. I can't see them forcing them to play every day for 5 days. I just can't see that. I think they'd say, well, we'll have to drop some games. And I think the league has to react here. And I think they've done a marvelous job to this point. I think they have to react to whatever the science dictates.
And we saw that yesterday, $100,000 fine to the Washington Capitals, Ovechkin coming out and apologizing for his actions. Now we'll see if there's any positive or negative tests, but for players sitting in a hotel room visiting, $100,000, they are taking it serious, no question about it.
Well, the option was to fine the four players, and the maximum fine is $10,000. And I think the league felt it was more important to make a statement and put a larger fine in place. And $100,000 may not sound like a lot of money, but in this year, it is a lot of money. And I think it's also a statement. Elliot Friedman was just on the radio here, and he was saying he believes it's a statement to the local health authorities all across the league that the league is taking it seriously. These were four players that gathered in one player's room and had a couple of beers, is what I hear.
Mm-hmm.
And even for that insignificant and infraction, the league came down really hard. So, and I say insignificant because to us it would all appear insignificant, but with the COVID protocols, nothing's insignificant.
It's almost weird. Like, we talked about the bubble as being so restrictive, but at least you could have a beer with your buddy because you were, you know, kept away from society. And then, oh, they're going to play without the bubble. They're going to be so much more free. Well, you can't even go to your line mate's room, even though you're sitting next to him in your dressing room and you're skating with him all day.
Yeah, it makes sense, though. And the protocols, again, the right to play, the return to play, was all negotiated with the appropriate health authorities. And so the rules have to be strict, and they have to be clear, and they have to be followed. So there is logic to it that, okay, you can sit next to this guy on the bench where we're in a sanitized environment and there's testing and all that, and then back in your hotel, stay in your room. So there is some logic to it. It seems overly restrictive, but it's not.
Enough
COVID talk. We were talking earlier about Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan and how they've had different wingers, well, almost on a yearly basis. I compared it to a bit of a Ginla Conroy kind of thing. Can you get in today's world or in the past, I don't think time matters, but is a duo as good as a, do you need three guys? I mean, you had Morrison and Naslund and Bertuzzi there. I mean, they dominated. Do you need three though, or can two carry the load and you can swap guys out?
Well, for as long as I've been in the game, the coaches have focused on duos. They've focused on pairs. And then if they find the third one, like the West Coast Express line, that was a magical line. That was just Morrison, Naslund, Bertuzzi. They just clicked. And then it was a perpetual revolving door to find the proper right winger to play with the Twins. And so it was Trent Clatt, and then it was Anson Carter, and then it was... So I think you want duos, and then you figure out who clicks with them. If you get a trio that works long-term, great. So, but I think even going back to my first year in 1987, I remember Bob McCammon was our coach, and he would talk about, I need two that work together. The third guy can shuffle in and out. We can try different people there, but I need two.
Brian Burke, our guest here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. The game last night, marquee matchup, Leafs and Oilers. Why? What was it lacking? Because it didn't really have the same excitement that we would have expected.
Well, I think Edmonton decided that they had to lock down a little bit, and so it wasn't a very enticing game. I agree with that, and we did the game. So we got rewarded with the late game. The late game was fantastic. But the first game didn't live up to its billing because I think Edmonton decided to lock it down. But there were still... some good moments in the game. The third period, there were some real good moments, but basically, yeah, it did not live up to its billing. And it's, I think Edmonton's trying to find some answers, and they found them last night.
Do you see that as an issue that this, you know, Gary Bettman's battled with in his, you know, decades running this league, that there is still that issue that when a team really needs to bear down and play an ugly game, that maybe it lacks some entertainment sizzle? Like, this was a game that was two Canadian clubs on national U.S. television. That's incredibly rare. That's like Halley's Comet. And it really wasn't enticing despite having superstars. And it feels like that's a lost opportunity.
Well, it happens. I mean, that's U.S. Edmonton Oilers. If they enjoyed last night's game, they're going to tell you universally, you're darn right we did. Because they were looking for some defensive answers, and they came up with them last night. And their penalty kill, the Leafs' penalty kill was really good. The one power play goal that Edmonton scored was a broken play and scored it out to Dreisaitl. But there's a lot. I said this after the game. If you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you don't say burn that film like you do after a terrible loss. They did a lot of good things, and Edmonton did a lot of good things, just not pretty things. And you're going to get games like that,
yeah.
Especially where teams are tired. I think that was 5 games and 8 nights for both teams.
And then the backdrop, the reason I ask, is they're going to be negotiating a new U.S. TV deal this offseason, and if you had a barn burner there, man, I mean, the ratings have been pretty strong because I think everyone's looking for things to do at night, but that could have been a behemoth to say, look, we had two Canadian teams and look at these numbers, but that one wouldn't have been holding viewers.
No, I would. I think, again, I think people in Alberta would tell you that was a piece of art, a work of art.
Yeah, a certain part of Alberta for sure.
Yeah, I just mean the context of the U.S. deal. It feels like,
yeah, I know,
that could have been good.
That late game, and I got to admit, I saw a good chunk of it, but back and forth, I don't know if it's a situation of sloppy, bad hockey making things exciting, but 11 goals and lead changes, Besser and Horvat leading the way. You picked Montreal to win that division. I love, they play again tonight. I guess just thoughts on, is it still preseason like hockey? Because 11 goals is not the norm. What'd you see out of that matchup?
Well, you're dealing with a compressed schedule after a 6-day training camp and no preseason games. So we all said in advance, expect some sloppy hockey, expect some run and gun games, expect some high goal totals. And expect some animosity as these teams continue to play each other. The animosity hasn't surfaced yet to the extent that it's going to after there's more familiarity. But first time through, it looks like early season hockey like it would any other time. And this is just proof to me. We fight with the players every time we do a CBA. They want a shorter and shorter training camp. I think this is established to everyone's satisfaction that you need at least 2 weeks of training camp and you need at least a few preseason games. So I respect what the players are doing. Without the proper preparation, they're playing hard. The games have been the players are working their tails off, and the competition, like even last night, it was a hard competition game. There's low event game offensively, but lots of hitting and lots of good defensive plays, lots of block shots. So again, not a work of art, but an intense game. And I think the players are delivering on their part as best they can without having the proper preparation. So this is what I expected would happen, would be you'd see some ugly hockey or at least some sloppy games, some high scores. I think that's to be expected. And you see a team, you know, last night, Vancouver allowed 5 goals and got a win. You know, that, and the number of 3-point games is staggering to me already.
Mm-hmm.
The number of, if you get behind now, it's easier to catch up in the sense that every game is a 4-point game. So that if you lose 4 in a row and you drop down, you can win 4 in a row and get right back in it because everyone you beat is a divisional opponent. But the number of 3-point games where teams are getting points, both teams are getting points, is amazing to me so far.
Do you see an issue there or no? Do you think teams are going to be more upset than they have been in years past about the 3-point games?
Well, I think it'll even out. I think that'll settle down a little bit and the better teams will start winning in regulation. But for now, it's been exciting.
We used to have a saying here, the Wild on a Wednesday. It was when Minnesota would come in, back in the old schedule, you'd see Minnesota 8 or 9 times, and they'd come to town, it'd be a weeknight, and Jacques Lemaire in the Wild would just bore you to tears. It was a recipe for an early bedtime. Bill Guerin has come in there and taken over. He's got Dean Evason as his coach. They made a lot of changes, frankly. 2 goalies out, 2 goalies in. Cam Talbot gets the free agent deal. They give Spurgeon the C. Bonino is in. Bjugstad comes in. Obviously, Kaprizov, the rookie, has been dynamite. But the Wild, all of a sudden, in that that West with Colorado and St. Louis, they sit second right behind the Vegas Golden Knights. 3-1 so far. I guess, is this the start of a great season for the Wild, a turnaround year?
Well, it's a good start for sure. And the Russian kid, Kaprizov, he's dynamite.
Yeah.
But we all knew he was going to be. Like, this is not a guy who just showed up here without any advanced billing. And, yeah, he's been good. They're off to a good start. I'm not ready to, after 4 games, I'm not ready to pronounce anyone has recovered completely. But, yeah, I like Billy Guerin's aggressiveness as a rookie GM.
Enjoy the weekend. We'll catch up in a week's time. Take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brian. Or Brian Burke.